welcome back to the program. For a generation of women struggling with the demands of trying to have it all, few little note no long remember that it was their mothers, many of the post-war generation of women, who made today's struggles even possible. A generation of women like Betty Draper and April Wheeler, whose frustration and unhappiness provided the predicate for the women's movement and whose contribution and sacrifice still shapes our discourse today. One of these women was the mother of our guest this morning, Ruth Reichel. Ruth Reichel is the former editor of Gourmet Magazine, a former restaurant critic for the Los Angeles and New York Times, the author of the bestsellers Comfort Me with Apples, Tender at the Bone, and Garlic and Sapphires. Her very personal memoir about her mother, For You Mom Finally, has been expanded and is just out in paperback. It is my pleasure to have Ruth Reichel back on this program. Ruth, thanks so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure.
Good to have you here. One of the things that we hear from a lot of women is that they don't want to become their mother. In many ways, you had written quite a lot before this book that, in fact, you became who you were in reaction to your mother, that you wanted to be the antithesis of your mother.
That's right. And as I was researching this particular book, the startling revelation that I had was that that's exactly what she wanted me to feel. And here I thought I was rebelling all along, and it turns out that she had a vision for what life for a woman could be that was very different than her own life. And she did her best to push me into this better life.
You talk about how this book in some ways started out from a speech that you gave, really, about your mother and the realization that you really had to go much deeper in terms of trying to understand her.
Yeah, I gave this speech, and I was sitting there trying to write the speech, and I looked at the calendar, and I realized that I would be giving it on what would have been my mother's 100th birthday. And I had one of these almost out-of-body experiences where the speech just sort of came to me. It was as if my mother was writing it for me. And here I am in this room of 1,500 people, and I began the speech by saying, I wake up every morning grateful that I'm not my mother. And my closest friend who was in the audience said, there was this gasp in the room. She said, I didn't know where you were going with that. And it didn't seem good. But then I went on to explain that I thought that my mother's generation were the unluckiest generation of American women ever, because they came along just at the time of emancipation. But nobody knew what that meant to be a liberated woman. And they had this promise, they were educated, and then they weren't ever allowed to do anything. I mean, they were smart, educated, and bored.
This period in the 50s, really, the early 50s to the mid-50s, you talk about as the worst possible time. Talk a little more about that.
Well, especially after the war. I mean, here were these women who, they got the vote, and they were trying to figure out how to be this new kind of woman. And then the war comes along, and women went into the workforce in droves and loved it. They were given this opportunity to take every job out there because they were needed. And then after the war was over, they were unceremoniously kicked out of these jobs. And, you know, here they'd had the experience of being, having this very fulfilling work. And they were told, give the work to the men. And so they had to go home and tie on their aprons. And it was a time when domesticity was revered, and every ad, everything was, be a good little housewife. And it was very hard for most of these women. They deeply resented having their jobs taken away from them. And there's a lot of research on it, and I found some great stuff online about how medicated many of these women were into being compliant housewives. And it was a time for many women, and my mother especially. When I read my mother's diaries, she was really unhappy at having nothing to do with herself. She had really wanted at one point to be a doctor, and her parents had said, you're not pretty and you're too smart, and if you become a doctor, you'll never find a husband. And keep the important thing in mind. Make sure that you have a family. And I found these letters from my grandmother saying, how we pray for Mr. Wright, how we hope that you'll find a good husband. And for many of these women, that wasn't enough.
For many of the women, in addition to medication, drinking also became a big part of their lives.
I can't say that was the case for my mother. but yet, certainly that is true. I mean, I think the thing about medication was that there was no onus about it. Where if you were sneaking drinks, it was guilty. But, if a doctor gave you an upper, that was okay. And so, many of these women were just, medicated. And the ads for these medications are, they're all about, they're all housewives pushing vacuum cleaners or surrounded by piles of plates, and they're all sort of saying, how to be happy with your lot.
And of course, as part of the what you found in all of these letters when you got into this, you found this exchange of letters between your mother and her psychiatrist, which was startling in so many ways.
It was. I mean, this man, and it's ironic. His name was Dr. Portnoy, and he was brutal to her. I mean, she, would write him these letters that, he would say to her, you're so boring. I know what you're going to say before you say it. And you could get better if you wanted to. You aren't trying. And here's my mother, deeply depressed. And he is just sort of, she's paying him to be yelled at and to be told that she could overcome this if she only tried a little harder. And, one of the things that she was one of the very first people to be put on lithium when it was still a trial drug. And she said what a relief it was. Not that the drugs worked for her, but just to be told that it wasn't her fault, that it was chemical, and that she wasn't doing this because she hated her children, she hated her mother, that it wasn't her fault.
You talk about, as you went through all of her letters, once you started reading them, that you saw her personality getting smaller and sadder over time.
Yeah, my mother started out as this vibrant woman. I mean, before she married, she married late. She was almost 30 when she first got married. And before that, she had a bookstore, and she had this incredible correspondence with authors all over the world. And you see her as this very alive person. And then as she tries to cope with domesticity, which bores her to death, you just see her be, it's almost like watching someone get put into a cage. And she keeps saying, there's got to be more than this. There's got to be more than just making meals and cleaning the house. And you in these letters, you just watch her struggling to escape this little life. She wants a life of the mind. She wants art and music and interesting conversation. And instead what she's got is, cooking, which she was terrible at. and you just watch her slowly, as her life becomes smaller, you watch her shrink into herself and become increasingly unhappy and then increasingly angry.
Is there a point where you sense that she just gave up?
Yeah, I think that, when I was in my teens and she was very middle-aged, and until then she kept sort of trying for jobs, and there is a point where she just realizes that she's not going to be able to do anything useful. And she was someone who really believed, she kept telling me, work is what we're made for. We're put on this earth to be useful to other people, to be of service. And she kept struggling to find the thing that she could do, and never did until she was a very, very old lady.
One of the things that you write about is your father's reaction to this, that it wasn't what people might expect as kind of a typical chauvinist reaction, but that he was proud of her, but he didn't know how to deal with her unhappiness.
He would have been happy for her to go to work. It's just that in the 50s, there weren't jobs for women. And she becomes angrier and angrier, and he wished the best for her, but he didn't know what to do for her. And he watches her just become sadder and angrier. And the thing is that she was not alone. She was like so many women of her generation. There's a reason why Betty Friedan wrote The Feminine Mystique in the early 60s. There was half the population. Their talents were being wasted.
What did she want for you? What did you find as you went through these letters, and what did you begin to understand that she wanted you to understand?
She wanted my life to be anything but hers. And I was not aware of all of these, at least I wasn't consciously aware of all of these messages that she was giving me. But in her diaries, she's writing, for instance, the earliest letter I found was one from her father, who wrote to her when she was 16, "You're a dear girl and you have a fine mind, but you'll have to accept the fact that you're homely." And her life was very circumscribed by the fact that she was not a beauty. And one of the things that she kept writing was, I am going to make this little girl feel pretty no matter what. And she had this notion that beauty was something you earned. You found it through self-knowledge, and that you didn't have to be conventionally pretty. So she kept giving me this message of, don't worry, you will find your own beauty. It doesn't matter that you're an unattractive teenager. Wait, I promise you. She also made me feel, because her parents so made her feel that the only thing a woman could do was find a husband, and that was the most important thing in life. And she said to me, over in many ways, her message was, if you don't get married, you can still have a really good life. You don't need a man to complete you. Independence is really important. And more than anything, it was, from my earliest childhood, I always knew that I was going to work. I never was brought up to feel that some man was going to support me. And, that was her biggest message. Get work.
You talk about how much more self-aware she was than you could ever have imagined. Talk about that realization for you.
Well, I in all of my books have made my mother into this. I mean, she was a strong and comic character. And what I realized in reading all of her diaries and letters was how generous she was to me, and how aware she was that of the limitations of her own life. And I think the most generous thing she did to me was, she knew that she was, that she had mental problems, and she just kept saying, you don't have to be me. You, just because I have these problems doesn't mean that you will. And she very consciously sacrificed my respect in order to make me feel that I could be a better person than she was. And I can't even imagine. I mean, as a mother, I think the thing that you want most is the respect of your children. And she really sacrificed that. Kept saying to me, I do ridiculous things. That doesn't mean that you have to do this. Try for something more than me. Don't be me. Don't emulate me. And that is an extraordinary gift.
And the respect that evolved for you was not only a renewed respect for your mother, but for her whole generation, a generation that we're just now, perhaps, the current generation, is starting to perhaps better understand through things like your story and For You, Mom, Finally, and the reemergence of Revolutionary Road and Mad Men. I mean, it's a story that people are just beginning to understand, I think.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that we have all looked at this generation as kind of sad, and you're right. I mean, Betty Draper is the perfect example of this, you know, very capable woman who's just lost. And, you know, we stand on their shoulders. I mean, so many of them pushed us to be better, to find another way. They understood that they were just the first generation of emancipated women and that they hadn't figured out how to do it, but they wanted us to figure it out, and they pushed us. It's an act of extraordinary generosity to be that unhappy and to give your daughters wings and say, you know, fly higher than we did, do better than we did, be happier than we were. And I think that this gift that they gave us, it's time for us to recognize it and to pay homage to them, which is what I'm trying to do in this book, and you know, trying to show that these women wanted so much for us.
Talk about understanding this in the context of what you see with young women today and this struggle to have it all and the guilt that is still pervasive.
You know, I think that it is still extraordinarily difficult to be a woman in the modern world and try and have fulfilling work and have a family. And, you know, we, as I was constantly saying when my young editors would come to me and say, you know, I'm pregnant, and I would say to them, now you're going to understand what guilt really is, because to be a working mother means no matter what you're doing, you feel that you should be someplace else. When you're at work, you feel you should be home. When you're home, you feel that you should be working. And we have put this enormous burden on young women who, you know, are still struggling with finding that balance. And our government policies really don't recognize that most women today do work, still are shouldering the major burden of raising the family, of taking care of the house. And, you know, as Gloria Steinem said, you know, I will feel that things have really changed when young men ask, how do I balance family and work life, the way young women are still asking that question.
Ruth Reichel, her book is For You, Mom, Finally. It's just out in paperback from Penguin. Ruth, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.